Many physicians, in commenting on the first psychiatric consultation records, in which Drs. Daniel Blaine, Howard Rome, and Dana Farnsworth discuss problems in doctor-patient relationships, specifically ask for a psychiatric consultation record on the treatment of the alcoholic patient. An estimated 5 million Americans suffer from alcoholism, and few problems encountered in general practice are more frustrating and difficult to treat. This psychiatric consultation record deals with the treatment of alcoholism in general practice and is one of a series of records presented by Roche Laboratories. These records are intended to supplement the postgraduate courses in psychiatry sponsored by the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, and the American Academy of General Practice. Here to discuss the treatment of the alcoholic in general practice are three well-known psychiatrists who have paid particular attention to this problem for some time. They are Dr. Jackson A. Smith, Professor and Chairman of the Department of Psychiatry and Neurology at the Stritch School of Medicine, Loyola University in Chicago. Dr. Merritt W. Foster, Jr., Associate Clinical Professor of Psychiatry, Medical College of Virginia in Richmond. Dr. Irvin M. Cohen, Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Baylor University College of Medicine in Houston and also at University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. Once again, questioning the panel of psychiatric experts is Dr. Carol L. Witten, a leading general practitioner of Louisville, Kentucky, speaker of the Congress of Delegates of the American Academy of General Practice, and instructor in medicine at the University of Louisville School of Medicine. The first voice you hear is that of Dr. Witten.
Dr. Smith, what is alcoholism?
Well, I think it's a condition where the individual drinks to his own detriment. He always has to drink excessively. I think he denies the fact that the drinking is causing him a problem, and whereas a social drinker, when his drinking becomes a problem, will cut back on his intake. The alcoholic actually will drink more then. And the alcoholic has a definition of alcoholism that usually excludes him. Either he doesn't drink alone, he doesn't drink in the morning, he only drinks beer. But this always acts to the point that I should cut down, but not that I should totally abstain. And I think when they finally get to the point where they're ready to abstain, they have to be pretty sick, because usually they'll give up their wife, their job, and so on before they give up the alcohol.
Well, now, it has been shown statistically that out of each 100,000 people in the United States, that approximately 5,000 are alcoholics. This would mean that this is a disease of a great magnitude. Can these individuals be treated? Dr. Foster?
Yes, I believe they can certainly be treated. Yet, to achieve any effective relief from his problem, the patient has got to make this first step of accepting that he is an alcoholic.
Now, Dr. Cohen, the vast majority of these people present themselves to their family doctor for care. Can the general practitioner help alcoholics?
I think that the general practitioner can probably help these patients much more than the psychiatrist can. In many cases, for the simple reason that the general practitioner is often closer to the patient than the psychiatrist certainly is initially.
Dr. Smith?
In many parts of this country, there is a stigma to going to a psychiatrist. Most alcoholics will accept treatment from the general practitioner much sooner and much more readily than they will from a psychiatrist.
Dr. Cohen, what can that general practitioner do? We have had stated here that first the patient must be told that he is an alcoholic or recognize that he has a problem. Is this correct?
I think that's a keystone of treatment.
And then what would be the second step, Dr. Cohen?
The second step, elementary as it may sound, is that the patient no longer drink. The third step would be to set up a relationship with the patient so that the patient begins to feel that he has an illness, or the doctor recognizes that he has a need for alcohol and that its loss is difficult for him, but that he wants to help him. And this relationship, I think, represents a very important aspect of therapy.
Dr. Foster?
If you think of it as a patient coming to you with a fracture, you put a cast around the broken bone, it stays there long enough for the fracture to heal. The individual that comes to see you who has been drinking too much, you take the alcohol away from him. He has learned to become dependent on to maintain his emotional equilibrium. You can give him back something in your relationship with him to replace this. an emotional cast, let's say, which will support him and his thinking and feeling long enough for him to form new patterns and get well.
Dr. Smith?
One point on this. I don't think many general practitioners or internists get people coming in saying, I think I have a problem with my drinking. Usually, the wife says, either you go in and do something about your drinking or I'm going to get a divorce. The employer says, one more bout and I'm going to fire you. So he goes to the general practitioner, the family physician, or his internist. And you can always predict he's going to minimize the trouble drinking has caused him. He's going to say that other people exaggerate the problem he has.
How can we get the patient to accept the idea that he is an alcoholic? How does one tell a patient, you are an alcoholic?
Well, I'm a great believer in the fact that you can't really do this. You've got to let the patient tell you that drinking is a problem and that he is using it excessively.
Dr. Cohen?
I disagree with that in some ways and agree in others. I think that some individuals will benefit by having the announcement made by an authority as a physician sets himself up to be that he is an alcoholic, and this may be the springboard for treatment.
Dr. Smith?
I'd like to emphasize, here I am a general practitioner, there sits the alcoholic, now what do I do? I think I've got to find out what his pattern of sobriety is as well as his pattern of drinking, because I'm not going to be able to change his drinking pattern. I give up on this one because I haven't seen it done yet. All I try to do is to change or alter this pattern that he follows when he's sober. I like to find out what usually precipitates about. Now, they say, well, a nagging wife or an inconsiderate employer and so on, but when they're sober, they make no effort to change this. They use it for a reason to drink. These people will say, I'm quite safe for 6 weeks. I like to say, well, why do you begin again? I think you have to say now, when 6 weeks are up, you're going to find some reason. There'll be something happen, and you use it for an excuse if you're not careful. That's when I want to bring them in to see them.
Now, Dr. Smith, I'd like to ask you about this alcoholic problem. Is alcoholism an addiction?
If you restrict addiction to any substance or compound for which you develop a tolerance in the sense that it takes more of that compound to get the same result after you use it over a period of time, I don't think you can call alcoholism an addiction, because these people do not develop a tolerance in the sense that you do to the opium alkaloids. No one can take 12 times the amount of alcohol that would kill someone else. I mean, I don't care how severe the alcoholism, no one can drink 12 fifths a day.
Now, Dr. Foster, as to the type of child, can one state with any degree of certainty that he has a greater potential for becoming an alcoholic than another?
I don't think so, but I certainly feel that individuals can become traumatized following birth, that the excessive use of alcohol is a learned experience, that this dulls these trauma, and this becomes a pattern in their lives.
Dr. Smith?
The alcoholic can certainly be traumatized, but what bothers me is that only a few of the anxious become alcoholic. And I don't think there is an alcoholic personality. I think there's an unknown factor here why some people can become alcoholic. I don't think we know, because all sorts of people have this problem.
Dr. Cohen?
I feel that while anxiety may not be manifest in terms of nervousness and tension and all the other somatic and autonomic manifestations of acute anxiety, that anxiety as a reflection of an underlying problem is the motor which makes that condition which is ultimately going to be alcoholism.
Then, Dr. Smith, you don't believe that the social drinker ever becomes an alcoholic?
My own opinion is that they're an alcoholic before they take the first drink. I think they drink abnormally from the start. It takes a long time before it becomes severe enough for them to accept the fact they are alcoholic or to accept treatment. They get into difficulty early in life, but they can cover it up for, I'd say, 10 to 15 years.
Now, Dr. Foster, this brings up the frequently heard statement that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Is this true?
I have never known anyone in whom drinking became a problem that could go back to being a successful social drinker.
Then, Dr. Cohen, an alcoholic, once recognized and diagnosed, should properly never drink again?
Yes, that's absolutely so. One of the fundamental tenets of Alcoholics Anonymous is that the individual recognizes that he can no longer drink and that he can only get by today with the help of God. And he also has a duty to the group.
Let me interrupt you.
Dr. Smith?
They go very much in Alcoholics Anonymous on confession. This one man said that time of his, I think, second marriage, they had champagne. He said, I don't think I should have any because I'm an alcoholic. And they kept insisting, well, you've been dry a long time. So he finally said, all right, he'd have a half a glass. And he said, 5 years later, I was still drinking. They're all convinced I was an alcoholic. Now, it's been reported 7 out of 100 resume social drinking. But to me, this is impossible because the alcoholic doesn't drink to socialize. He drinks with another endpoint, and I think ordinarily this is oblivion. And I think another diagnostic point is, if he smokes, whether or not he blisters his fingers. Social drinkers don't drink to this point.
Dr. Foster, we've been talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. Do the psychiatrists think AA is a good mechanism for treatment?
This one certainly does. I like to use anything and everything at my disposal in helping a patient. Well, I think this is an important thing, and certainly something that I always suggest to an alcoholic.
Dr. Smith, 10 or 15 years ago, studies first came out of England on the use of drugs specifically for the alcoholic, the drug that if he was taking and took alcohol, that he would immediately become ill and not wish to use alcohol anymore. What do you think the usefulness of this type of drug is in the treatment of the alcoholic?
Well, I think it's quite useful to use disulfiram or else the new one, calcium carbamide, for this reason, that if you can get a patient to take disulfiram, you can quit talking about don't drink, because if he takes the drug, he can't drink. Now, I think far too many internists and general practitioners particularly are frightened of this drug because you get acetaldehyde shock sometimes, but the patient doesn't die. Now, the alcoholic will say, if I take this stuff and I drink, I may die. And I always say, well, if you don't take it and drink, you're much more apt to die because, grant, they go into shock, but they recover from it. I think it's an excellent drug, even if you've got liver damage. I don't think that this contraindicates it at all.
Well, I think this is interesting. I think one of the most reassuring things, Dr. Smith, I've heard has been that when they go into this coma, they won't die.
Now, again, with disulfiram, you may get transitory impotence, some drowsiness. But you can't afford to tell a patient you may become impotent, because if you tell a man you may become impotent, he'll be impotent before he gets out of the office.
That impotence, even if transitory, is quite a problem, I should think.
I had a great big house painter. He drank whiskey because of the lead in the paint. Of course, there hadn't been any lead in the paint for some time, but that was the excuse he gave, so I put him on disulfiram. And he came back in and flopped down the chair, and he said, you've dehorned me. And I said, well, that too will pass. And he said, well, it sure as hell better. And luckily for me, it did.